This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Eric. Come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your host, Just Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, as always. And joining me, as always, is my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scotland, how are you?
Good evening, JR, and you, not the JR that plays for the Cavs, thankfully. Welcome, everyone, to episode 491 of the longest-running episodic motherfucking gold standard, which will go longer than the Cavaliers' trip to the finals. I'm sure you haven't made a J.R. Smith mistake at on the arsonist's court, right? You guys put in offensive putbacks?
Well, no, but we have had to institute a manual scoreboard situation, as you know, because it was getting hard to keep track of scores. So as the games got more difficult and the level of play went up, it got harder to keep track of the score because I'd be more exhausted. So,
you know,
especially I'm chasing one of our guests tonight here around the court. But Scott, it was about 20 episodes or so. We did something similar to what we're doing tonight.
Yes.
And that is a Road to WrestleMania preview show. So back in November, before we talked to WrestleMania 3, we had a crew on and we broke down the big matches on the top of the card. And we did kind of a preview special. It was well regarded. Got a lot of good feedback. I think everyone enjoyed the different, mixing up of the format. So we brought the same crew back here tonight. And again, we're going to do a Road to WrestleMania show, but it's going to be different than we did for 3, because obviously every Mania has different things about it and different ways to go about previewing it. So that's what we're going to do tonight. So I guess we should waste no further time. Let's see if anything you want to cover here in the open.
No, everything's good. How was your weekend? Everything pretty good?
Yeah.
Uneventful?
Yeah, pretty uneventful. I did get my brand new smoker grill tonight, my Rec-Tec.
Ah, looking forward
Nick
to
Duke approves.
Dead animal on that.
Yeah, I made some chicken tonight that came delicious. So, I think your work is going to go down at St. Mary's, though. I'm going to have to find other tasks for you to do because this thing, you just kind of set it and forget it. So,
oh,
you're out of a job.
Forget it.
Put out a job by a machine.
Technology.
Computer took my job, baby.
Kick me in the butt and give me a gold watch.
It even has an app to measure temperature and it lets you know when it's done. So
I'll have to download it. That's
more beer drinking time.
All right, well, there you go. You're good. Talking food. You know, this guy couldn't fucking resist to jump in. And that is, of course, our first guest here tonight, my man, the sheriff, Pete Schermacher. Pete, how are you?
Fantastic. How's everyone doing?
We're good. We're good.
Good.
And I think you might have heard the guffaw of another one of our friends here at PlaceToBeNation.com and PlaceToBePodcast. He hasn't been on in a while, though, Scott. He was with us like every week for a while, but it's been a couple months now. Actually, maybe even, God, Kelly Nelson, is it like 4 months or so?
Yeah, it's been
February, maybe?
Yeah, 4 months, boys.
Jeez, that's a long time for us.
It's a long time.
Can't let that happen again. So welcome, Kelly. How are you? How are your Flames doing?
golfing yet again. They're doing good in 1988, though.
That's true.
We missed it, Cal. Last episode, they dropped 10 goals in the last episode we have with Peter.
Yeah. So. Yeah. They scored a lot of goals that year.
All right. So let's see. So officially, Cal, your last appearance was February 19th, the 11/24/87 house show.
Yeah.
That was your last appearance.
Yeah.
There you go.
I've missed a lot of really great cards while I've been gone.
Only the ones that Pete's part of. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Pete got the good ones.
Always.
Always. A long-standing rib with you bastards.
Speaking of ribs, I can't wait to try that on my smoker. But anyway, all right, we have one more guest with us here tonight. You hear him here often as well. I got the pleasure of hanging out with him last weekend. Ate plenty of good food, hung out at the Rotella Memorial Day party, helped me with the children on my weekend alone as a single dad. And that is, of course, Mr. John D'Amato. Johnny boy, how are you?
Yes, guys, I'm honored to be on this crew. This is quite an eclectic bunch. It reminds me of the WrestleMania 2 Long Island celebrity crew. You got Criscolo as G. Gordon Liddy, and you got Big Pete as Chocolate Thunder Daryl Dawkins. And you got Kelly as Cab Calloway. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
of course, JR is the boss slash lead announcer, so it's quite a crew. I guess I guess I'm Herb from Burger King, the nondescript nerd.
I'm gonna call you.
You got the biggest pop of the night.
I'm gonna call you Elvira, Johnny, because you always look good to me, buddy.
Hey, that's right. Thank you. Hey. Coming off a triumphant win on the Flanagan Courts.
Yeah, all right. Now forget it. I was nice to you, and now fuck you. Okay, here we go.
I wasn't going to mention you were on the opposite team. I wasn't going to mention that.
Okay, that's okay. It was a good game. You played well. It was good to get you back out there after the dismal performance last time. So.
Yes. And the recovery is getting better. So.
Very good. All right, so why don't we go ahead and get started? So we're going to do this thing in two halves. In the second half of the show, we're going to rebook WrestleMania 4 in our own manner. It could the tournament have done better? Could we have done a non-tournament? We'll talk about some of the build and where, you know, how they got to where they got. So the next week, Scott and John, when we get into WrestleMania 4, or on our next episode, I should say, we will be able to avoid that kind of discussion as get into the show itself. So we'll handle that tonight. That'll be the second half. In the first half, though, just like we did last time, we're going to go back in time and look at some matches and topics that may or may not actually relate to what we're talking about, but they kind of do, and Kelly Nelson's going to walk us through it. But we're going to look at kind of some tournaments that had happened in the world of the WWWF or WWF before this. We're going to look at maybe ones from different territories as well, get a feeling and a flavor for what kind of tournaments were occurring leading into WrestleMania 4 at this point in time. And then also, we can talk about some other stuff going on. So, Kelly, I'm gonna pause there. I'm going to turn things over to you. You're going to lead us through this first segment because you did assign us some homework. I'm going to let you walk us through that and take control.
All right. Yes, I hope everybody did their homework. I'm a history guy, so here we go. I love talking about the 70s in particular, 80s too, but the 70s because they're so neglected and people just outright avoid them. So I always like to praise the 70s. The WWF prior to WrestleMania 4 had a pretty spotty history with tournaments. A lot of them were outright fictitious tournaments. And, the big three for them, the three like creation myths of their three biggest titles, were all fictitious, and they're still talked about today. They're actually part of their history and in record books as actually happening still in 2018. The original one is way back in 1963, supposedly on April 29th, 1963, in Rio de Janeiro, and we'll hear about that city again. The creation of the WWWF title happened, and the final was between Buddy Rogers, who we all know is credited as the first WWWF champion, and he defeated this man. Anybody familiar with who he supposedly defeated in this fictitious tournament final?
Was it Antonino Rocca?
Yes, ding. There you go. Argentina Rocca, who actually was, I believe, not even wrestling in New York anymore. He had a falling out with Vince Sr., and he went and started promoting his own shows in the New York area and partnered up with Jim Crockett Sr., actually, at one point in time for talent. It's a fictitious tournament. It looks like it was actually created by one of the wrestling magazines later on, probably maybe several years later, to give like an origin story for the title. Because at the time, what happened was, of course, Rogers was the NWA champion. He lost to Luthez in Toronto. But on the New York TV, the way they handled it was the commentator said, well, there's rumors that Buddy lost the NWA title in a match in Toronto, but don't believe that didn't happen. Rogers is still the champion. So that's what they said on TV. So they didn't even attempt to create a WWF title at the time. They just went on with the story that Rogers was still the NWA champion, or just the world champion, I guess they would call them. And then they actually presented him with a belt on TV. I believe it was April 18th, 1960. And the funny thing was the belt they gave him was actually Rogers' own United States championship that he held prior to winning the NWA title. So they just reused that belt. And if you see pictures of Bruno, when Bruno first wins the belt, he has that championship. It's the one with the physical United States belt look to it.
Yes. Yeah.
And they used that as the actual first WWF title. And I believe it was actually stolen from Bruno's car one night in New York. And that was the end of that one.
So we should look in D'Amato's basement to see if it's there.
Yeah. I think it actually surfaced in the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, I want to say. Hmm. It was in somebody's attic, you know, a typical story like that. Or maybe it was one of his other belts, but...
Yeah, didn't Hunter present it to Bruno? Right, wasn't that on the dock?
That may have happened. Yeah, maybe. That would have been a great ending to the whole story, that it got back to Bruno in the end. So in 1963, they weren't trying to create this fictitious tournament. It was something, like I said, the Wrestling Megs came up with. I don't even know if they even went as far as coming up with like semifinal matches or quarterfinal matches or anything. I tried to research this earlier today to find if there was even like a link to the original magazine or something that I could find, but I couldn't find anything. So that was the creation of that title. The next fictitious tournament in their history was in 1971, and this was the creation of the Tag Team Championships. They had titles before that. They had a United States Tag Team title in the 50s and 60s. They had an international Tag Team title in the late 60s, early 70s. But this was the creation of the title that would last, well, to this day, although it's kind of muddled and they've split off and had different tag titles, and I couldn't even tell you the lineage. But the creation of the WWF Tag Team title supposedly happened in New Orleans, of all places.
I'm kind of familiar
with
that.
June the 3rd, 1971. Yeah. It was Crazy Luke Graham and Tarzan Tyler were the original champions, and they supposedly defeated Dick the Bruiser and the Sheik in the final. And if you're, you know, if you know your history, this is a real, like, kind of a head scratcher, because, you know, New Orleans, of course, that had, you know, they didn't run shows in New Orleans in 1971. Of course, this was to make it, or to cover it, so that no fans could actually, like, try and verify if this tournament actually happened. But they would always say, like, and this happened with fictitious title changes over the years, they'd always say, oh, it happened in, you know, five states over for some reason. So don't try and find footage of that. I mean, it just didn't.
Scott, is it upset you that people are trying to keep things that happen in New Orleans away from you? Is that bothering you, this tournament?
Well, are you alluding that it happened or didn't happen?
I'm saying who knows. No one knows.
No, who knows is not an answer. Did it happen or did it happen?
I heard they
everything
celebrated.
What do you think, Kel? Did it happen?
At, the Cats Meow. I heard they celebrated after the match. They all went to Cats Meow.
Went all night long.
Nobody sang. All right, continue, Kel.
Everyone rode Space Mountain.
Wasn't fictitious. And the Bruiser and the Sheik were never involved with the WWF at this time. In fact, they were in a promotional war in behind the scenes in Detroit at the time. The Bruiser was trying to muscle in on the Sheik's territory in 1971. So it's strange that they pulled those two names of all two names they could have got for this final. So that was the creation for that, you know, for the tag team belts. And then most famously in 1979, we went back, or the WWF went back to the country of Brazil and to the city of Rio de Janeiro for a tournament that never happened. Pat Patterson emerged victorious. This was the merging. Well, it's been told in different ways. I think the original story was that it was the merging of the North American title with the South American title, a fictitious title, and which created the Intercontinental title. And there's also the story, and this was, I think, recently told by Bruce Pritchard on one of his podcasts, that the only reason they came up with Rio de Janeiro as the place where this happened was because Patterson couldn't pronounce Rio de Janeiro, so it was a rib. So they'd have him cut interviews on TV where he had to say it or try to say Rio de Janeiro, but it was all just a rib. Yeah, but it's funny how they went back to Rio de Janeiro, you know, from the original 1963 tournament. I don't know if it was just a coincidence or if someone actually cared about having some sort of continuity. It seems like it wouldn't have been something anybody cared about. But anyway, that was the site. And there is a date for it. September 1st, 1979 is when it supposedly happened. And about 5 years ago on WWE.com, they printed a bracket, like a you know, someone made up the actual bracket for the 79 tournament. And the only thing I remember, well, I remember things. I remember Moose Monroe, jobber in the territory, was in the tournament for some reason. And the final was Patterson over the unpredictable Johnny Rods, of all people.
That's Pete's dream tournament right there.
No footage has surfaced as of yet that tournament. So those are the big three fictitious tournaments. So there was actually some real tournaments, though, in the history of the WWF in the 70s. And they all centered around tag team tournaments. And the first one that happened, unfortunately, we have no footage of it. For some reason, it's a sort of a gap in the footage or in the year in 1976. Story was, or the angle was, the Executioners were the tag team, masked team. Anybody know the true identities of the masked executioners?
Big John Studd.
Kowalski.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Kowalski and Studd, a very young Big John Studd, who was trained by Killer Kowalski. And what happened was they'd been the champions for quite a while, and there was a match on TV, October 23rd, 1986, Championship Wrestling, where they went against Chief J. Strongbow and Billy White, and the match ended with a third executioner. Now, here's a true challenge. Anyone know who the third executioner was?
Nikolai Volkoff.
Nikolai.
Yeah, there you go. Just like on Brain Buster. So yes,
cheating.
No honor among thieves here.
My hands in the air.
Scott Schmock cheated.
My hands were in the air. Fucking cheat nothing.
Yeah. So I believe this is the only time he is the third executioner, and yes, it was Nikolai Volkoff who was in the territory at the time. And so he interfered. The match ended in a disqualification. And the next week, the president of the WWF, Willie Gilsenberg, who we're going to see briefly on some of the footage here, made the ruling that because of the involvement of a third executioner, the executioners were stripped of the title, of the titles, and the tournament, though, didn't start until December 4th for some reason. More than a month to get it going. And this tournament, it was a seven-team tournament. The executioners got a bye to the semifinals, which I guess is somewhat fair since they never lost the titles. And there were some interesting teams in this one. First round matches on December 4th included Toru Kamada, Titans' favorite, and Nikolai Volkoff, who would have thunk it, and defeating SD Jones and Frankie Williams. Not the best choice in partners by SD.
And SD Jones is a top 100 wrestler.
Yeah, goddamn right.
Wasn't he top 70, yeah, top 60? No. It wasn't just top 100.
Yeah.
He's a shitty partner, yeah. That's why.
No.
So that would end up being, I believe, one of the only, or maybe the only, clean victory in the whole tournament. It's a really weird tournament that way. Second opening round match happened on the same show. Strongbow and Billy White Wolf defeated this iconic team. At the time, not iconic, but in the 80s, would achieve iconic status, legendary status. Anybody want to venture a guess who this team was? Nobody? No Googling.
I'm not Googling.
Some Asian team.
An Asian team? They became legendary in Japan.
It's not an Oriental six-man tag team champions.
Oh, yeah, those fucking Orientals.
But they weren't Oriental.
Blast's eighth wife was.
Okay, time's up.
Now
the answer may surprise you, but maybe not. Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody.
Oh wow!
Wow.
Teamed they were together in 76.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, Hansen had the legendary run with Bruno in 76, and then Brody actually was the next challenger for after Hansen was done. And actually, that was the first time he used the Bruiser Brody. it's crazy because they wouldn't really team much again until the early 80s, and then they became famous. Then we have more opening round matches. We have Gorilla Monsoon, who wasn't really wrestling too much at that time, teaming with Jose Gonzalez, who had a very interesting future with Bruiser Brody in 1988, if you guys know your history. And they defeated Johnny Rods and Doug Gilbert. And that was the last opening round on Mad Emmy Finals. We had Executioners losing by
how old was Doug Gilbert? Because when he's in the 96 Royal Rumble, Vince is calling him a youngster there.
That's another Doug Gilbert.
Okay, so different, right? Doug Gilbert, right? It's got to be, yeah.
Yeah, that's the brother of Eddie Gilbert.
Okay,
right?
The
Royal Rumble in 96, Doug Gilbert. This Doug Gilbert was, I guess, just a sort of a New York guy, local guy.
So it wasn't Doug Gilbert then. It wasn't the father using the name Doug.
I don't think so. No, I think this Doug Gilbert was just a jobber in New York. I could be wrong, but I don't think he was related to the other Gilberts. And so we have, okay, one finals team. We have Strongbow and White Wolf. And then in the other semifinal, Kamada and Volkov defeated Monsoon and Gonzalez via countout. So none of these matches, nobody was going to do a job here. I mean, typical 70s wrestling, basically. And then the final was held on Christmas Day, 1976. Strongbow and White Wolf finally win the tag team titles by defeating Toru Kamada and Nikolai Volkov by disqualification in the finals. So even in the finals...
So you get all the way to the finals of this tournament, you're still going to do a fucking DQ.
I know. It's very strange. Like, you'd have thought even like maybe Torquemada could have taken a loss, but no, neither could do a job. So that was, yeah, Strongbow and White Wolf, not exactly, you know, the most dominant run to the titles here, but they would hold those belts for quite a while into the summer of 1977, when Billy White Wolf, in a famous angle on TV, is put in the swinging full Nelson by Ken Patera, and kayfabe breaks his neck, and that was it. He was gone. Billy White Wolf was the future Sheik Adnan
General Adnan.
Yeah. Yeah, famously hated Chief J Strongbow in real life, and
wasn't the only one.
I say, is he friends with Parr?
And may have actually, yeah, that may have ended like the. That's why he left. Like, he couldn't stand being in a team. Strongbow. He just basically quit the territory. So that happened June 11th, the neck injury angle to White Wolf. They didn't get around to the tournament until, well, the 77 tournament appears to be just the finals. It doesn't look like they even bothered to have any other matches, quarterfinals, semifinals. And the final didn't happen until October 1st. So almost 4 months without tag team champions here. And we do have footage of the 1977 final. That is Larry Zbyszko and Tony Garea, pretty underrated tag team actually, going against former champions from earlier in the 70s, and also the only heel tag team not managed by Captain Lou Albano during the his glorious managing champions in the 70s and 80s. That's Mr. Fuji and Professor Toro Tanaka. Nice. So, yeah. I made a call to our friend Landy to get this footage because it's no longer on YouTube, and he answered that call and provided it to us. And yeah, I'd seen this a few years ago, and I thought this was actually a pretty good match. 2 out of 3 falls from the old Philadelphia Arena. So this was before they were even doing tapings in Allentown, and we have Willie Gilsenberg at ringside with the tag team belts ready to present them to the winner. Gilsenberg, I think, only lived another year after this, passed away. The original president of the WWWF. And yeah, I think I've talked enough. I think it's time for you guys to maybe give your thoughts on this match. I thought it was a really good match. Told a good story. We had some good psychology here. Yeah. Anybody? How about Scott? What are your thoughts on this match?
I enjoyed it a lot. As we were saying before, it's funny, you know, because most fans look at Larry, you know, as this big barrel-chested guy, like in the Enforcers with Arn, and just a very slow kind of Memphis-y heel. But watching a lot of the All-Star stuff on the network, you know, 78, 79, he was really a good worker, even when he had his cool, like, evil Western handlebar mustache thing going on, even though he was a babyface. He was pretty slick, and, you know, Garea was always a good hand in the late 70s, particularly as a tag. I was actually surprised, because I didn't know. I kind of kept myself in the dark. I had totally forgotten who had won or lost, and I actually thought that they were going to win. I was kind of surprised. I didn't look at the list, and I didn't know that. Yeah. Tanaka and Fuji actually won. I thought because you kind of thought at the time baby faces always win tournaments at the time, so I kind of thought that they were going to win. But I thought Fuji and Tanaka were a good team because they show them a lot on some of the earlier All-Stars, and I kind of liked watching them wrestle. They had a good back and forth, and you know what I liked is Fuji wrestled, you know, the typical, you know, evil, you know, Asian way. Well, it's the 70s, so I could say evil Oriental way. And,
yes.
But Tanaka was kind of like the power guy, so he actually didn't really wrestle like the, you know, usual, you know, token Asian offense. He was actually like a bruiser guy who hit with power moves and stuff and clubbed you to death, and I kind of dug that. So it was neat to see, as much as I was surprised that the heels won, I kind of liked Fuji and Tanaka as a tag team. So, but the match itself was very good, again, like JR said, for those that don't know Larry that well from that era, he was a pretty good worker early on in his career.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he was still a good worker later, but it's a different style, right? So watching him like fly around the ring as the kind of the white meat baby face was like, whoa, you know, it's kind of eye-opening when you see it because you don't see a ton of it. So it was like really cool. Like he is just all over the place. Just, you know, it was like watching like Rick Martel or something in there. Like, you know, like that's how much he was flying around when he was getting his shine segments in. So like that was unique because most I think of us, at least people my age, are probably more familiar with the stalling, you know, psychological based heel Zbyszko from like the 90s or 80s and 90s. So that was neat to see. Fuji's not ashamed of his gut, that's for sure. He does. There's probably ways he could have maybe dressed himself up a little bit better, but he's let it all hang out there. But no, I thought they were really good on the heel side. It was a really good match, and yeah, I was surprised too when they took the tournament or took the match rather to knock out the faces. So that caught me off guard as well. But it was good. It was well done. So I was surprised.
Yeah, I forgot to mention Dick Worley. The referee in this one, and he just what an idiot. So many missed spots. It was just a really poor performance by Dick Worley that evening. John, your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it was definitely a solid tag. And Vince really sold the kamikaze clothesline. He went overboard on that. This typical 70s jingoistic.
Yes.
Yeah, and I love the kamikaze clothesline, actually. It was a pretty pretty cool move. It always looked good.
Definitely.
Yeah, Fuji getting some air there on the clothesline. And Pete, any positive things to say about this?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a bad match, but I wouldn't call it good by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, we have the heels right at Jump Street are going to the nerve hole right off the bat. I mean,
yeah, there was no shine by the faces at all.
Yeah, just right up nerve hole, Jump Street. I thought Gurria looked great getting the hot dog, and he was running wild. And then they cut him off and pin him, so it was pretty anticlimactic, the finish of the first fall. Because it looks like he's gaining momentum, and then boom, they pull out the, you know, they slip on the banana peel thing. Second of all, I like Gurria as the face in peril, tagged to Larry, and I thought Larry was awesome when he was running wild and equalized it. Third fall again, I actually really enjoyed the faces here where they're actually actively cheating as a comeuppance to the heel, so I like that dichotomy. And they're after the leg, but then the heels pretty much steal the win, which was, you know, fit their character in there in the racial way of how they're portrayed and stuff. So back then, it was solid stuff. I wouldn't, you know, nothing amazing or anything, but good solid tag.
Yeah, and the booking for the WWF or WWWF tag team titles back in those days was the heels usually held the belts like 80% of the time, and then the faces would get a win, but only 2 or 3 months later they would lose to the next big heel team, and they would just repeat. Like, it went on with the exact same formula for 14 years or so.
And the crowd was pretty hot for the match too, all things considered.
Yeah, they were.
Totally hot. I mean, it was rare that they would see a match of that significance in the Philadelphia arena, so they were pretty excited. I like, there's not a lot of footage of the Gurria Zbyszko team out there, but I've seen them in some pretty good matches. There's some matches where you would think, you know, based on their opponents, it'd be horrible, but one that I can remember was them against George Steele and Baron Cicluna from MSG from maybe a month before this match, and it's really good. And you would think, well, with Steele and Cicluna involved, I must be crazy. But no, it's a really solid match. And Zbyszko was actually, like you guys have said, pretty good as a babyface.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty good worker at this time. And Gurria, well, he was Mr. Tag Team.
I will say I love him and Martel's tag team.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's the most famous one.
And, you know, Kelly, too, we're covering a lot of tag team stuff. Don't forget, we are in the middle of the PTBN Greatest 30 Tag Team project ever. So if any of these teams hit your radar as we talk about them, mention them. Like, I know you mentioned the Executioners. I'm sure they'll pop up with votes. Tanaka and Fuji, I'm sure, as well. How many Gurria teams are going to get votes on your list, Kelly? All of them, Pete?
Oh. Well, I mean, his original team was with Haystack Calhoun. Not too much footage out there of that.
It has got to be a hard pass, honestly.
Gurria Goulet is going to be Kelly's number.
Oh, yeah. That's,
spoiler.
There was also Gurria and Dean Ho, which were like in the 1975 team. There's a very little bit of footage of them, too. But, I mean, yeah, Gurria and Zbyszko I'll definitely vote for. And, of course, Gurria and Martel. Will be high up there for me.
I was talking to Cowboy Senior last week on the way down to Memorial Day, and he was telling me about the shows he would go watch like in the 70s growing up. He's not much of a wrestling fan now, but he was at the time. Gurria and Goulet, they called the Go-Go Boys or something? That's what he said. That was their name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I came up with the G&G connection. Yeah, but I mean, Go-Go.
Yeah, that's what he said. He goes, oh, yeah, it was this team... it was the Go-Go Boys, and he's going through. He's like, "Yeah, it was a Gurria and Goulet." I'm like, "Oh God, really? Like that was their fucking name?" But he had some pretty good.
Like, is that like in a gay club or something, or what?
Oh my God!
I'm thinking that's what Gurria said to Vince on that TNT when he goes, "Yes, I'm looking for some nice young Go-Go Boys." And then he gave that look in the camera like, I'm talking to you, Pat, or something of that strange nature. Well, it's just chortling behind the desk.
But it was interesting to get his perspective as someone who went to a lot of shows, like in the 70s, Boston Garden and some of the tent shows up here in New England. So he was talking about. But I told him, I said, we're going to get him in the get him in the project group page and let him talk some stuff in there. So.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, I love hearing stories from that era.
Come on, Pete. You're all over this. Louis Cerdan, Tony Parisi team. Come on.
Kelly, you should get him on. You should do for your next quarterly special. Get him on talking some 70s wrestling. He almost talked the whole car ride to Connecticut on it. So.
Oh, wow, really? Yeah. No, he sounds like my kind of guy.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot now about the Goulet Gurria team. So without further ado.
Go.
Let's go to the 1980 tag team tournament. This came about because the Wild Samoans, they had run roughshod over the territory for much of 1980, and finally at the showdown at Che in August, they lost to the Dream Team of Bob Backlund and Pedro Morales. And what happened was, I've heard different stories. One story, and the magazines seem to repeat this over the years, is that for some reason, if you held another belt, you couldn't hold, you couldn't hold two belts at once. So Backlund had the world title, of course, and you couldn't hold the tag team belts.
Yeah,
but
that was
on
the one story, yeah.
Yeah, but then earlier today, I went on to Kauffman's site, historyofwwe.com, and checked what was actually said on TV. And apparently, it was 2 weeks after the Showdown at Che show, where Backlund and Morales, in an interview segment, said they just wanted to beat the Samoans. They didn't care about the belts. They just their satisfaction was in defeating the Samoans. So they'll let some other up and coming teams have a shot at the title. They didn't need the glory or they didn't need the belts. So that's apparently what happened. They voluntarily relinquished the titles, and so this made the titles vacant. Yes, yet again. And this tournament is strangely booked, to say the least. It appears maybe there was some thought put into this that former tag team champions were was kind of the theme of this tournament, or it probably just happened randomly. But you have guys like Dominic DiNucci, who had two runs with the tag belts in the 70s. Gurria, of course, several runs by this point. Baron Cicluna was in this tournament. He had a run early on in the 70s. And so maybe there was some sort of theme. I don't know. Otherwise, it was a booking disaster because you had an opening round match of DiNucci and Rick Martel defeating Johnny Rods and Baron Cicluna. And then the following week, you had an opening round match where Tony Gurria and Rene Goulet, the Go-Go Boys, defeated Johnny Rods and Jose Estrada. So Rods was part of two teams that lost in the opening round of the tournament. It's nice how he could just keep going and putting together teams and getting second chances, third chances. And the semifinals are also a mystery. So the Wild Samoans, much like the Executioners in the 76, had a bye to the semifinals. But another team had a bye to the semifinals in 1980. It was the illustrious team of the Black Demon and Silvano Souza, for some reason.
Or die.
Matt Souza's grandfather.
Yes.
That's right. He's wearing a Bruins jersey.
Yeah. So you may be asking, who are these guys? The Black Demon was a wrestler named Don Serrano who wrestled in several territories. I did a bio on him way back in the day on Titans of Wrestling because he participated in the Cobra Clutch Challenge in 1981. And that was Sergeant Slaughter's gimmick, and I did a bio on him for that. Silvano Souza, though, I never did a bio. So
I can answer for you. He's like every Portuguese from Fall River.
Well, he looks like...
He loves boxing. Yep.
He likes Rock Lobster wings.
Makes doughboys.
Looks like a poor man's Butcher Vachon from the brief little glimpse that we get of him in this one match. He was basically a longtime jobber in the territory. 1974 to 1984, so a decade. Among his career highlights, he went on a tour of All Japan in 1976, where he went 1-21 during the tour. He did get one victory.
His one victory was over SD Jones.
And it was like against the Japanese equivalent of SD Jones, probably.
If that match was true, I'd put Silvano Souza in my top 50, goddamn it. So you give me proof and I'll do it.
Yeah. So one tour. He, besides New York, he wrestled in Amarillo in 1979, which wasn't exactly lighting the world on fire at that time. Also not lighting the world on fire was 1982 Vancouver, where he wrestled, and he also held the Canadian heavyweight title. So that shows you how far that territory had fallen at that point, if he was holding the top singles title in it. And he also wrestled in my beloved Stampede Wrestling in 1982. Yeah. Oh, well. So according to wrestling data, this is the first...
Antonio, I know that.
Oh, wow. See, there you go, Pete, with some bonus knowledge for you. San Antonio. So that must have been probably when he did his Amarillo run.
Actually, I think it's during their Stampede. I think it was like in the 82-83 type of thing.
Oh, wow. That was when, yeah, Silvano went on like a tour of the territories. Good for him. And so the Demon and Souza, they get a bye to the semifinals in this tournament, but this was the first time, according to wrestling data, they ever teamed. So
what they did a bye then?
I don't know.
Really?
I don't even think it wasn't even stated on TV that they got a bye. It's just that this tournament was so haphazardly put together that they just realized, oh, well, we don't have another semifinal team and we've already booked the first round. So let's pick these two guys that are sitting in the corner of the arena, I guess. I don't know. It's a mystery. We do have brief footage of their match against the G&G boys. Very brief. Anybody have any thoughts on this quick clip? We don't even get to see Souza in action. It's called Demon. Yeah.
Well, that's the crime, so we're skipping it.
Kelly, I have a question that only you could answer, probably. Rene Goulet. Okay. Goulet had the... He had the Sergeant Goulet on his tights. Was he some sort of a French army sergeant that we don't know about? French assassin. That's why he used his glove to choke the people out.
You're close, John. But Kelly will tell you.
You're close. That's a very astute. In other territories, well, in the South, in Florida in particular, he wrestled as Sergeant Jacques Goulet. And... He was part of a tag team with, I can't remember now, but they were the Legionnaires, and they were quite over and used quite a bit, as far as I know.
And by the 80s, he was called that because the fans wanted to have Legionnaires' disease watching him.
Legionnaires.
When Slaughter came in, did they probably make him get rid of those tights or? Because there's only one sergeant around here, you know. You're not Sergeant Goulet anymore.
Yeah, I don't think this was even a long run by Goulet in New York at the time. I think he just got called up, and just didn't even have a chance to get some new.
Back to the crapery with you, sir.
But yeah, I know it must have been confusing for anybody watching who wasn't familiar with his work outside of New York, why he was suddenly Sergeant Goulet. I don't think it was ever incorporated into his New York persona. I could be wrong, though.
Kelly, here's a question you may only know the answer to. Is Silvano a real name?
Is it a real name? I don't know. sounds real enough. So we do have a couple matches in full to talk about. The first one is the semifinal match between Dominic DiNucci, my man, and Rick Martel and the Wild Samoans. This is from September 9th, Allentown. That was when it was taped. It aired on September 13th on Championship Wrestling. But it's also on All-Star Wrestling September 20th, 1980 that is on the network. It's actually the final episode in the big drop that they put up. And, well, I'm a big DiNucci guy. I knew about this match just from reading the results. It was interesting. I thought that DiNucci got the first crack at Rick Martel when Martel came in, but just wasn't up to snuff, and Martel had to move on. It's interesting, too, that Gurria also ditches Sergeant Jacques, I guess. And I can picture, like, the backstage scene where they're like, okay, you want to ditch your partner? Yeah, let's form a team. I think we'll be better off.
You're just not getting it done anymore, Rene.
No, Rene. And DiNucci was clearly on the decline at this point. Basically, this was his last chance at glory. After this, it's all him teaming with random job guys for the rest of his run in New York. It's quite a set.
He's on the right baby face, for Christ's sakes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and he actually, his last run as a tag team champion was with Dino Bravo in 1978, DiNucci's. So he liked the Quebec guys.
DiNucci.
Sad ending. Sad ending for Dom. Scott, some thoughts on this tag match?
I mean, I like the G&Gs. Again, I thought they maybe would win the run. Again, another tournament where the heels come out, which I thought was kind of...
We're talking about the Gurria one, right?
No, this is the semifinal. Did you watch the semifinal?
Are you talking about Souza? Oh, I thought we had already skipped that already.
No.
No, we skipped that. This is DiNucci and Martel against the World Samoans.
Oh, man. I like the Samoans. I thought they were a tremendous team. Very unusual for that era because you didn't have a lot of teams like that who were unhinged in that aspect, even with a manager, because I'm watching a lot of these All-Stars and even like the Valiants, but I mean, they're kind of like classy guys, but they get unhinged. Maybe the Yukon Lumberjacks, but the Samoans were definitely a different kind of breed. So, you know, DiNucci and Ricky Martel had a nice career ahead of him. And it's funny because it's like a tale of two different kinds of guys. Like, you're right. Pretty much DiNucci was cooked at this point. And Martel obviously had a big, long career ahead of him. So he could be sacrificed and no one would remember that. So, but I just like watching the early Samoans because they were just so unhinged and it was very different to see them in 1980 in that kind of environment.
Yeah, visually they're one of the great looking tag teams of all time.
Right.
In the ring, that's a different story.
Well, yeah.
That's what I found interesting here, Kelly. When all the tight ends, when we saw them in like an MSG and stuff, they flat out stunk.
Yeah.
Here in a TV setting, it was like it took a hell of a lot more bumps than they ever did in the big arenas.
Yeah, and that's something that, if you're familiar with the MSG footage, or even the Spectrum footage, and you watch the All-Star footage that's on the network or other footage of championship wrestling, you see like the TV matches were much more faster, you know, much more faster paced. The most of the matches in MSG outside of the main events were the 20-minute draws and the long 2-out-of-3-fall tag matches with so much downtime. The TV is really good, actually, because they don't waste any time at all. And that's definitely a better form for the Wild Samoans than long tags at MSG, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, if anyone has any thoughts on this one, it wasn't much of a match. Dom gets counted out, so he was still being protected a little bit here.
Martel was clearly at another level than everybody else in the match.
Yeah, he came in as a great House of Fire, as he always does. JR, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, Martel was my big takeaway. He was fantastic. He's always, like you said, the House of Fire that he comes in and cleans house. But I do like watching the Samoans, too, even though I get to deal with Albano. Or earlier era Albano, I can tolerate more than later later on Albano. But I thought the Samoans have a good heel presence, too. They worked well as a team, and it was a fun match. I mean, just the atmosphere of the 70s crowds Fedoto, yeah, is so crazy. Especially when you just get like a pure babyface team like DiNucci and Martel just going in there and firing everyone up against such clearly defined heels as Samoans. And tag team wrestling, as you know, was so big in that era. So this stuff all felt like such a big deal, especially being on TV. Yeah. So, yeah. Do you ever think we'd have a time where you could say it was on the 19 whatever episode, September whatever episode of All Star Wrestling? It's on the WWE Network. You pull it right up. Like, did you ever think we'd live in a universe where you're going to say that some random, you know, television show from 1980 would just be on a $9.99 fucking
yeah,
network?
I know. It is awesome. Actually, so much has changed in the last few years. It's hard to comprehend.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that what's available like 4 or 5 years ago was totally unfathomable. John, any thoughts on this barn burner of a tag?
I was distracted. We have to discuss Albano's wardrobe attire. This must have been in the summer where Allentown doesn't have any air conditioning. He went with the bathing suit with the kind of split at the at the legs.
Looked like Frey at the Scenic City walking around.
Yeah, with the flip flops and a friggin' and a red open shirt to show. He actually wasn't that fat at this stage. He was
no.
He didn't pack on the pounds right yet, but yeah. No. And
or it could be him standing next to the Samoans, which doesn't hurt. Yeah, I think I could look stand next to the Samoans.
Yeah, no, Albano really balloons in like the next couple of years.
Oh yeah, he's fucking grotesque by the mid 80s.
Yeah. By the time he's feeding with Jimmy Snuka, he's like 300 pounds plus.
Especially after Senior dies, he probably just porked up extra just to stick it to Vince.
There was one episode of All Star. There was one episode of All Star I watched last week. It was from August. It was the same thing like in Hamburg where it was probably like fucking 95 degrees, and because it was like August of 79, and I don't know who he was with. I forgot who he was wrestling or who was wrestling for him. But I mean, at one point he's walking around the area like barefoot. Like,
yeah, he takes off his flip flops and he runs into the ring
like,
barefoot.
That is just gross. Like, first of all, his feet are fucking gross. Secondly, you don't even know what's on that floor. It's like, oh god, it's horrible. So disgusting. He's just repulsive.
And especially how he considers the fans of Hamburg, Pennsylvania. That famous promo where he calls them every name in the book.
Yeah.
The minorities, when you're talking about
Hamburg,
you got the minorities, the retards.
Oh, Jesus. So bad. It was terrible.
Yeah.
It was disgusting.
Well, TV tapings for Al were, just an excuse to polish off a bottle of vodka, basically.
Pretty much.
There's some really great promos, where he's clearly just wasted. So here we go, the finals of the 1980 Tag Team Tournament. G&G Boys, I'll never forget that name now.
The Go Go Boys.
The Go Go Boys.
Well, if you have Senior on your show, you could ask him about it.
Go Go Boys against the Wild Samoans. And we reviewed this on Titans years ago. And it's compared to the 77 final, it's not really much. Again, we have Dick Worley making horrible calls left and right. He should have been fired after two tournament screw jobs, basically. And Scott, your thoughts on the finals here?
Again, I mean, the Samoans are fun to watch. I mean, Green and Goulet, in all seriousness, they are, they're fine in the ring, but obviously the Samoans were the team of the moment in terms of big heels, while the and seeing DiNucci in the previous match obviously tells you that, the roster as a whole probably in 1980 needed probably a little structure restructuring. So giving the belts back to the Samoans was not dumb. Keep them strong while you kind of restructure the babyface side and create some new teams. You got Martel there. Tito was still around, was still there young and vibrant like he was. Again, watching the ones in 79. Great crowds, support for him. So, I mean, I was not surprised, and I just like watching the Samoans wrestle. I mean, they're just a typical good heel, like bludgeoning, blunt force object. Just Albano's just disgusting. But other than that, it was just a chance to kind of get the belts back on the strong heels, in my opinion, while waiting for the baby faces in the promotion at the time to kind of restructure themselves. But it was solid enough.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have much more than that to add. It was fine. It was by the fourth match of this playlist you put together, Cat, I was about good with the Go-Go Boys. But it was fine. Same thoughts. The Samoans.
Everyone, Kelly.
I enjoyed the Samoans. And yeah, it was fine. It was fine, Kel.
Poor Renee. Renee got a hot tag, and it lasted about 5 seconds. Super Guerrilla distracted the ref, and they double slammed him, and he was done. That's in like right. 5 seconds. The crowd popped. Yeah. The crowd gave Renee a nice pop, but it only lasted about 5 seconds. Super Guerrilla messed it up for him. So.
Yeah, it was a super quick finish. My favorite part was Albano's victory dance, or whatever you want to call it, at the end, where he jumps up two or three or four times just randomly after the Samoans win. That was my favorite part of the whole match. Yeah, well, you know, back in those days, yeah, there was some really great stuff, and then there was a lot of this stuff that was pretty forgettable.
Pick some of the great stuff.
Well, but I had to go with the theme of the show, the tournaments. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the tournaments weren't meant to be great. That's the whole point.
Yeah,
the whole
point. Yes, yeah. See, they didn't learn much in 1988 from the prior tournaments, well, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the premise here is, if I may for a second, Cal, the premise here obviously is – the tag division usually, obviously, the IC belt was stable at this time in 1980, and even previously, talking in general, even before the IC belt when it was just the world title situation was always stable. Even if somebody got hurt, mm-hmm. you know, Vince Sr. didn't strip belts or anything. Like when Hansen, you know, broke Bruno's neck, you think they stripped Bruno of the belt and they had a tournament? No, they didn't. It's fucking Bruno. It's the Bruin. He's going to sit in a hospital bed with the thing around his chin, and then two months later it comes out and he beats the shit out of him. That was Bruno. Same thing with all the other guys that had belts. The world title was never going to be a storyline potato like it would be later on down the line. You know, guys would never have to be stripped unless something really bad happened, and obviously Vince Sr. took care of his world title guys, so they were never you know, there was never a chance for him to have to do that. Whereas the tag, I mean, look at all the reasonings why we had to have tournaments. Guys quit. Guys got legit hurt. I don't know if I think, you know, backstage nonsense kind of stuff. So obviously this was what we're going to be talking about in a couple weeks is unprecedented that not just a singles title, but the world title is in this mysterious – well, not mysterious in the sense that we know the tournament brackets, but just the fact that it's so unstable. You know what I mean? As a singles belt, whereas back in the Vince Sr. days, his top guy was his top guy, whether it was Bruno or Pedro or Superstar Billy Graham or Backlund. You know, you weren't going to have – there was not going to be any problems where the world title had to be in a tournament. I mean, think of all the times that the belt was held up for a reason, whether it was you know, Backlund and Bobby Duncombe or something like that, you know. They'd have another match and Backlund would win. I mean, it was very simple. Like the world title wasn't a storyline hook.
Yeah,
it was a moneymaker. You know what I mean?
Of a Hogan having like a 4.5 year run with it, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, there was never any kind of schmozzy thing with Hogan, and it was never the world title was the world title. It was the moneymaker. The tag was always the tournament thing because either A, somebody got legit hurt, or B, we had some type of business problem, such as Billy White Wolf telling, you know, Chief J to fuck off, which we'd all like to do. And, you know, and then you had to have a tournament. So really, you didn't see this a lot, which made it very unique and interesting because the world title was not the kind of thing you hot potatoed back in the Vince Sr. years. That was your moneymaker. You weren't gonna make that unstable. You know, even if you had a match. You know, Bruno would always have these trilogies with, you know, Kowalski or whatever, George Steele or whatever. And you never had anything held up or anything. Like, Vince Sr. was not going to pull that shit. You were just going to have a schmozzy match and then have a bunch of rematches, and that was good enough to bring people into the garden. You didn't need to hold up the world title, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas the tag, you know, it's the lesser belt, and you could have some fun with it kind of thing. It's the tag, you know. It's like the leftover belt. You know, it's kind of
up the main belt, which was the time – Backlund and Valentine, they didn't really hold up the belt. It was just more of an angle in-house.
Right.
So
Yeah, and that was just in the New York area too. It didn't even go beyond that. Yeah.
Exactly.
The tag belts. Well, the story is always Vince Jr. doesn't have much respect for tag teams, and I don't know if his father had a lot either. I mean, it was just it was kind of an afterthought even in the 70s. It wasn't a big deal. It was a big deal when Vince Sr. first started promoting in New York in the 50s and early 60s. But after that, it was just a undercard thing with not too much importance. That's for sure. Anyway, well, that's the end of the WWF story of tournaments. I mean, there's the Wrestling Classic that's been discussed to death, I think. definitely not a classic. There were some King of the Ring tournaments prior to, well, of course, when it became big in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It was a house show thing. The first couple were in Foxborough Stadium, right, as like a summer show.
Well, they obviously acknowledged the King of the Ring on TV because obviously that's how Harley got it.
Because when
he first came in, he was handsome. And then I remember on the Cindies, they acknowledged that Harley won that tournament to be King of the Ring. So that I do remember. And you know what's funny? You mentioned quickly, Kel, you mentioned money and tournaments. Like anytime there was a money thing, it was always a battle royal. It was never a tournament. Mm-hmm. Like the Wrestling Classic was unique because they wanted something to put on the Hogan Piper hook. Mm-hmm. Usually when they did big money things at house shows, it was usually battle royals. Because obviously, for time constraints, it was easier to do one thing with a bunch of guys than try to stretch something out over a whole night or whatever. But anyway, I just wanted to say that it was funny that you mentioned the Wrestling Classic and money, because it seemed like going in, we never saw a lot of that because, a lot of the money stuff were in battle royals and things like that.
And traditionally, battle royals drew, while tournaments traditionally never drew. Which is weird, because like now on the indie scenes, tournaments draw. But in the 80s, it was completely different. I mean, thing. Yeah, the tournaments didn't, because it wasn't about personal grudges, which is what wrestling was built on in the 80s and titles. So, battle royal.
But what about in the South, people like UWF? Georgia did a lot of tag team tournaments. I know that was like their annual Thanksgiving tradition, was to do a tag team tournament. But the UWF had some famous tournaments in the 80s. The one that Pro Wrestling Illustrated sponsored for, that was for like $50,000 or something, wasn't it?
Mm. And then in 81, I was just watching the Mid-Atlantics before they put the All-Stars on, and then I went back in my timeline. But I was watching the 81 Mid-Souths into, or not Mid-Souths, Mid-Atlantics into 82. Mm-hmm. They were doing the huge super tag tournament.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because they stripped Ole and Gene. So they did this whole like regional thing. We're going to have a Tokyo bracket, and we're going to have a bracket. And I'm thinking to myself, all right. That was the one thing I used to love. And not to go off the subject, but it was one thing I loved about early Mid-Atlantic is that they thought too much outside the box. Like they tried to get too fancy pants, and they never knew how to explain it right. That's what always used to drive me nuts about Bill Mercer, too, in World Class. Love Bill Mercer to death, but sometimes he would like try to over-explain something, and then he totally lost himself. Same thing with that tag. Like, we have to have multiple brackets and mini tournaments. And I'm thinking to myself, guys, don't stop making this so hard. Just have a big tournament with a zillion teams and roll with it. You know, it's like we need a sub tournament here and a sub. It's like the College World Series. It's like sub regionals, and it used to make me laugh. But, I mean, they took this tournament and just like blew the thing up.
I mean, you had your Crockett Cups, so those things never.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the tags, those drew, or kind of drew.
You got the UWF title, how they did that, and that was actually one of the better ones. You had, in 89, I guess you had Starcade, Future Shock, where you needed a scoreboard to try to see who was winning, and had all these wackadoodle rules and stuff. So, forgetting everything is like keep it simple, stupid. I mean, sometimes, God, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Plus, the other thing about Battle Royals, too, Pete, that you were saying, the reason they drew better is because you had a better chance of seeing special attractions. You know, guys at Gentile, obviously the biggest one at the time was obviously Andre. Right. If you were in New York or you were in, even in AWA or whatever, and you knew a battle royal was coming in, 90% of the time you were probably going to see Andre, which was huge at the time, obviously. So it was easier to get the special attractions and get the money off that than trying to stretch out a, you know, 12-match night with, you know,
yeah,
for something, you know. So that was the other thing, too. It was easier to make money off a match, one match with a bunch of guys that you could put specialty guys in without having to drag it out over, you know, 5 hours or whatever.
And then a lot of places did it annually, so it became a tradition. Like in Houston, right, they did it the very first show every year of the new year. Obviously, and the Cow Palace always had them with Pat Patterson and those guys. So,
right, the Battle Royals. Yeah, well, if you treat it as important, then the fans will perceive it as important. So a lot of those areas had annual tournaments, annual battle royals, but the WWF never really treated these tournaments as important. They were just haphazardly booked and randomly thrown out and stuff like that. I think when you come to WrestleMania 4, it's strange that they went with the tournament idea in a lot of ways, because they didn't really have a history of it being a successful draw for them before, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, and we can get into that, I believe, right after this break. I think it's a good segue, but any other final comments on anything we watched or any tournaments pre-88 that we wanted to cover before we wrap up and take a break?
I'm good.
No, I think we're good.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and take that break? When we come back, we'll talk about other possibilities for what could have happened at WrestleMania 4, tournament or not, and we'll kind of set the stage for when we actually review WrestleMania in a couple weeks. So stay right there. I'll be right back.
Okay.
When I feel cold, you warm me. And when I feel I can't go on, you come and forever.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceofNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place of Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today.
All these shows, plus others, available at PlaySpeedNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySpeedNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySpeedNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Nation, welcome back. You're listening to our Road to WrestleMania 4 preview show. It's myself, Scott, John D'Amato, Pete Schermacher, and Kelly Nelson. Hopefully, everyone's enjoying the ride so far. Scott, no pop culture quarter this week, of course, as we're just kind of floating aimlessly through time. But we will be back, of course, our next episode. We'll have the info on your end. So look forward to that as always. But why don't we dive in? There's three different slants we're going to take as we kind of preview WrestleMania 4. One is going to be taking a look at the bracket, original release of the bracket, which actually was a little bit different than what it ended up being. Then, guys, I think what we'll talk about is the actual bracket and what they could have done differently with what they had. And then thirdly, I'd like to really take a minute, because this is something that we haven't talked too much about. What could this card have looked like without a tournament? So, you know, what matches could they have had? How would it have been shaped? You know, we can assume who would have been champion, however we want to do it. So we can get to that last. But so the original tournament bracket, as listed here, was kind of similar to the one that eventually got posted. But there are some changes. So Hogan and Andre had the bye originally, as they eventually would. Then the next set of matches was Jake Roberts versus Rick Rude and Don Morocco against Dino Bravo. And then, so the winner of those two would face off and then face Hogan and Andre. Then Steamboat, Valentine, Savage, Reed in the middle, and then Bam Bam, Bigelow, and One Man Gang against Duggan and DiBiase, who's in the bottom bracket. So the main differences here are Jake and Rude were at the bottom. DiBiase and Duggan were up top. And those are really, I think, the only differences, right? Because Gang gets the bye. Where Snake and Rude get eliminated, and then DiBiase obviously is at the top. He would have matched up with Hogan and Andre. So if you look at this here, this kind of screams at you that maybe the original final was supposed to be Hogan DiBiase, right? Anyone agree?
Yeah.
Disagree?
Yeah, I think so. Because you figure with Savage in the middle. Yeah, I guess Bam Bam would have, if it stayed this way, well, this would have been interesting. This, but they probably painted themselves into a corner here, really. I don't mean, because you would have had Hogan Andre the second round. Jake and Rude would have had to have had a finish. They weren't going to go to a draw, because you weren't going to have the Rock Bravo match go to the fucking semis. That wasn't going to happen.
Well, so, what if Hogan and Andre went to a draw and Snake and Rude also went to a draw? Then you have the Rock go to the finals, baby.
Yes.
Dream run.
Big revival for him. I mean, I think you're probably looking at Hulk Andre and then probably, I'm guessing, Hogan Rude and Savage DiBiase with then Hogan DiBiase in the finals. That's my guess.
That's what I think they were. I think that's what they were definitely leaning towards.
Yeah, I don't know if this first bracket was even something they really had too many plans for.
You think they just fucked up and released it? Yeah.
Or they had the names they wanted, and put that out, but they didn't really to book it beyond that. I don't think they... I don't know if DiBiase Hogan was the booked final.
Yeah, why do a tournament? I mean, you could build up a singles match like that.
Yeah. One story I've heard is that they wanted DiBiase to win the tournament so that a year later at Five it would be Hogan and DiBiase to finally tie up that story.
And that kind of goes with that Savage Honky story, but they would have known this by now, right? Because that was at the main event where Savage was supposed to win.
Yeah.
And this came out after that. I think it's very likely, Kelly, that you're right in that they just released this without really logistically thinking. They would just put the matches in the brackets without kind of looking at it, and then we're like, oh, shit, you know. But I do think Hogan DiBiase as a final was possible. I mean, the story could have been the shock of, you know, Pete just having the big title change on national TV like that, and then Hogan gets his revenge here by beating Andre and DiBiase on the path.
And that's what the booking looked to be leading to. You know, early in '88, you kind of thought, well, it's going to be Hulk and DiBiase.
Hogan was going to take it disappear for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you knew that. Because, he had to, because he was making No Holds Barred, so he wasn't going to get the belt back until later. Plans changed. At some point, DiBiase was supposed to get the belt to have Hogan chase him, but then they figured out that Savage and Hogan would be a bigger deal if built up properly, and I think that's
match,
right.
They would have built up a big singles angle, and they probably would have had DiBiase go over like pretty hardcore, but in like a way that injured Hulk for what could explain him being gone for 6 months or whatever.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one else viable at that top half of the bracket either, because it kind of shows where they were at, how quickly kind of the roster's in good shape, but at a very high tippity-top main event level, it's not really. Because if you're looking at this, it's like, all right, who here is believable to be in the finals of DiBiase? Because you could have had Andre injure Hulk, right, or something like that, Pete.
Yeah.
And then DiBiase beat someone else, but without Savage, it's kind of like, who's even there? Jake? I mean... There's really no one else that could have gone that far on that side of the bracket.
If he wasn't on bad terms with the company.
Right, yeah, he was. I mean, at that point, he wasn't going that far. Yeah. I would think Jake is probably next in line with these other... Even like a Bigelow, who had been positioned well, but he's with DiBiase, though. So, I mean, he's not going to make it to the finals with this iteration.
I was going to say Bam Bam, up until about a month before Mania, or maybe a couple months, was red hot and was pushed heavily. And suddenly that just ended. He was
out of the company by the end of the year. So,
by the end of the summer, I think June is when he's done. There was a few stories with Bam Bam, like his head got pretty big, pretty fast. He thought he was, you know, better than a lot of guys, and started big timing a lot of people, and he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and then he legit. Blew out his knee at one point, I think. Or broke his ankle.
What went out during this tournament?
Yeah, I think before the tournament. That's why the match
Before, yeah, but it was during the tournament.
Yeah, that's why the match was so short, because he couldn't even do anything, basically. Or maybe it was a broken ankle. It was one or the other, knee or ankle. And, yeah, but he had some momentum early in the year, for sure. Steamboat was pretty much done. The Rock was mid-card.
Mm-hmm.
This was Steamer's last appearance WWF.
Yeah, that's right. Duggan, he had been, he was kind of mid-card too. His best stuff was yet to come after WrestleMania, so I don't know.
So I guess that kind of leads to the next topic. John, I'll look to you. Like, was there anyone that should have been in the tournament that wasn't? Is this the optimal bracket that they ended up with? Would you have done less guys? You know, like, how do you think they handled the tournament versus what it could have been, given who was on the roster?
No, I just would have made it a Final Four, because, I mean, even the markiest of marks knows that Dino Bravo and Morocco and these guys got no shot whatsoever. So why even bother? Just cut it down and make it a Final Four. Make it the Hogan Andre and DiBiase Savage, and then have some intrigue like in that final Saturday night's main event leading up to it. Have like a play-in match where Honky Tonk talk some crap and says, hey, I want to be the greatest world champion of all time. I'm already the greatest intercontinental. So I have like a match between Honky and Macho where Macho gets his revenge and pins him clean, you know, to play off that angle where he gets his ultimate victory and he gets his way in as that fourth guy and just have a final four. Forget about the rest of the guys because there was no way that Butch Reed is gonna win the title. Everybody knew that. So
what's your finals if you do the four then? Hogan, DiBiase?
I would keep it like it was. Have like a big shock and have Andre and Hulk count it out and then all of a sudden, hey, this is gonna be the main event and yeah that part is okay. And then just shock everybody. Say, hey, this is going to be the main event, and the winner gets the title. Macho and DiBiase.
See, the only
I don't know, man, I would have gone at least eight because if you're booking, I mean, if you're presenting the show based on a tournament, I think you're feeling you're screwing your fans out by you're only going to have two, three matches, and it only turns into two.
Yeah, but instead use the guys in the tournament and just use them in other matches.
Well, I know you'd use them in other matches, but yeah. I still think you need to at least have like a tournament. I mean, I'm all for having like the same base thing and use it on like the Saturday Night main event, maybe using the undercard. But I'd have a final eight. I'd have a final eight people in there for the final show.
I mean, I think. Part of the reason, too, I don't mind it is, like, it's almost like, even though it's obvious some of these guys don't have a shot, and you get this in the Rumbles, like, later on, especially when the title's on the line and the few times they've done it, it's like all of a sudden these guys all have a shot at it. It's like, and it's not played up as much in 88 as it is later when, like, oh my God, you know, Santino Marella has a shot at the championship. Like, all these guys are presented as legitimate contenders. But in a way, like, when you rewatch it, it is kind of cool that Don Morocco finds himself in the semis with a shot to go to the championship, you know, go to the finals and be one step away from the world title. Like, it kind of makes a nice story, even though they really didn't have much of a chance. And when you look at it objectively, there's really only three legit favorites with, you know, a Bigelow and a Jake maybe as dark horses, you know, peering in. I didn't mind it too much. But the idea of eight is interesting to me. Scott, if you had a pair down to eight, what six guys are you dropping and what are you doing with your bracket?
I would drop, Gang, Duggan, Gang, Bigelow, Butch.
Shocker that you dropped Duggan.
Well.
Shocker the night.
Yeah, well, because he, as Jesse said on the Superstars that day before, that's the guy that would be our champion. Thanks, Jesse. I agree with you 100%. Gang, Bigelow, probably most of that middle bracket. I would probably have Hogan, Andre. I think I'd keep the Snake Rude match. Rock Bravo. And no, I can't do that. Because I wouldn't want Savage DiBiase so early. Well, I would readjust the matches, but I would still do Hogan Andre. But I would do them all in one round. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you wouldn't have Hogan Andre in an extra round because it wouldn't be able to.
See, I would have him go to the. You can't. Yeah, they'd have to go out in the first round. So you could have them go in the first round. DiBiase get to the final.
I mean, we move Jake and Rude to the bottom and have them do their draw still.
Well, no, you can't do two draws. So if you do your four, Hogan Andre at the top. DiBiase, you could do DiBiase Steamboat maybe second, right? DiBiase gets a big win there, and he automatically goes to the finals because Hogan and Andre double DQ. And then on the bottom, you do Savage Valentine and Jake Rude, and then you do Savage Rude in the second round, and then Savage DiBiase in the final. I think that would have been pretty good, and that takes out Morocco, takes out Bravo, takes out Bigelow Gang, Duggan,
put them in the Battle Royal or something. Yeah. You know,
well, I would maybe still keep Bigelow and Gang because they have a pretty good. I mean, they continue to feud into the MSG the next month and everything. So you could have just had them in their own match.
Shows that he's already hurt, so there's really
no. Yeah, just leave him off. Yeah, that's it.
And he's on the shit list anyway.
Because you're probably going to still have some other matches here. Although, you know, you could have shrunk the card down. You didn't need all the fucking matches they had. What do you think, Kelly? How would you have?
It wasn't the show really bloated with a lot of stuff. That
it was
5 minutes.
Super bloated. It's two tapes. A lot of
title. Yeah.
I mean, there's 16 matches. I mean, yeah, they could have cut that.
Yeah.
So if you do 8 in the first round, I mean, you know, you're cutting down however many, and then maybe you drop even. I think there's other matches you could probably could have killed here too. We'll get to that in a minute. But how would you have done this with the tournament, Kel?
So who would get cut? Let's see. Well, the Rock and Bravo, that to me seems like that's the most out of place match, or the two guys that are the least deserving of being in this. Bravo had just went single not too long before this, and the Rock was, well, I guess he was involved in an angle with the One Man Gang and Butch Reed and all that, but drop those two guys. You gotta have DiBiase. Bam Bam and Gang, they were presented as or had been presented as pretty top guys not too long before this. Reed was, he wasn't he done? This was his final match.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was done.
So I think he might be on TV for a little bit. I don't know if he's immediately gone, but it's not much more after this.
Yeah, I mean, knowing what happened, I mean, you don't want to see Roberts and Rude again, because that match sucked. Steamboat Val. I mean, I'm of course,
but,
I'm.
But you know, maybe it was because they booked him to do a draw. I mean, I remember enjoying their match. I didn't. They were blowaway matches, but I remember enjoying their matches on the house show circuit.
Yeah, I mean, and I love both guys. Like, I'm a big fan of both Jake and Rude, of course. Well, and the big problem was the crowd in Atlantic City was just a bunch of high rollers that didn't care about. Yeah, care about wrestling.
This is,
so there was
I was wrong, by the way. This is Reed's last match.
No, he. Yeah, I thought it was. It's tempting to book Steamboat and Savage for the second year in a row, which isn't that another story that was originally supposed to be the plan, that Steamboat was going to win his first round match, and then.
Well, that's how Steamboat viewed it. He thought, okay, blah, 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 I'll go over Valentine, then I'll return the favor to Randy in the next.
Right. Yeah, and Valentine wasn't going anywhere. Face versus face at the time was pretty rare in WWF.
Well, I think, too, I mean, I've always defended the move because, yes, it could have maybe given another classic, but on one hand, how much time are they really going to get, right? Maybe, what, five,
no,
six,
yeah,
seven
exactly.
minutes?
Exactly.
We're lucky we get a Super Brawl 3 Scorpio Benoit finish where they, you know, they get their 15 minutes, but they get the pinfall at 14:57 or whatever.
But know? Even beyond that, to me, you risk, on a night where Savage has to be the guy, you risk splitting his pop, right? If you look at the guys they have him face, it is pure straight heel, right? It's Butch Reed, no one gives a fuck. Valentine, no one likes. Gang, no one gives a fuck.
Yeah.
DiBiase, everyone hates. So it's like, you know, they're not even risking putting him in there with anyone that could possibly get cheered over him.
Not only that, if there were issues and they got wind of him leaving, then they don't want to make him look good on the way out.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
I would
the way they booked
I think you said it, JR. I would have married him to DiBiase Steamboat.
That would have been a... Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know if there was any hope for a classic match on that Sunday or whenever it was in 1980.
DiBiase looked good. Looked strong.
Yeah, so he gives DiBiase a quality win.
Yeah. That's a good
former Intercontinental champion. Guy who ended up beating the future world champion.
Yeah. Yeah, the way they booked it was actually the best way, really, with Savage going through four guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was the best way.
So maybe keeping it at 14 was ideal, then. Maybe it shouldn't get cut down to 8, right? Because it makes Savage's path that much more enormous.
Yeah, because that was the story, that he had to go through four, whereas DiBiase only had to go through, well, potentially two, I guess, right?
All
right,
well, John, let's look at it this way. Let's look at it this way. So keep the tournament as is. Are there any other matches that weren't tournament matches are you cutting? So we have Bad News winning the Battle Royal. We have Warrior Hercules, Beefcake Honky, the Islanders six-man, Demolition Strike Force. So are there any of those that you'd lop off to make this a little bit more digestible of a show?
Fortunately, not really. The rest of those guys deserve to be on the cards. So.
Yeah, but you could put them in the Battle Royal.
Yeah, that was a.
Warrior was about to blow up. They had to put him on the card.
I would have just had him win the Battle Royal.
Having a singles match on a card with a tournament made no sense.
It made him look worse, and the finish is shit. Like, we'll talk about it next episode, but like, it doesn't look strong, so it's not like they gave him a big dominant win. He would have been better off just squashing someone, you know what I mean?
And then
Bad News winning this tournament, all he did is set up a feud with a tag worker and Bret.
Right.
I mean, yeah, in hindsight, it's Bret Hart, but it's still...
Vince was hot on Bret at that time. It didn't last too long.
It did nothing. I mean, Bret ended up back in the tag belt, I think, right after
that feud. Right. Well, hindsight is 20/20. Yeah. But at the time, Vince thought Bret could be a big star because he was getting a lot of fan mail and all that.
Yeah. Now, definitely the two tags, though, got to stay on. I mean,
but if we're putting... Warrior in it and having him win it, then I'm saying I don't think we needed that. I think Warrior going over in that Battle Royal would have been a bigger moment for him in this Mania thing.
I mean, that would have led to an interesting moment. You'd have the Ultimate Warrior against a man who in Stampede Wrestling was billed as the Ultimate Warrior in Bad News Allen as the final two in the Battle Royal.
Right, you could
have
done that.
Stu and you've got some. Only three would like enjoy that, huh?
I had to throw that out there.
You've got some slugs in this Battle Royal. I mean, did you really need Danny Davis or the fucking Young Stallions? I mean, you really need these fucking losers. You could have probably thrown Hurricane Warrior in this. I mean, if you were looking to keep it 20 guys, that's fine. If you were going to throw if you're just going to do an indiscriminate number, then fine, throw them in too. But if you were going to keep it at 20, if they were that anal about it, you could have gotten rid of some of the fucking bums in this. I mean, let's see. Bad News, I would keep. Bolsheviks, I keep. Obviously, the Heart Foundation, I keep. Killer Bees, I can go either way at that point. Danny Davis, gone. George Steele, definitely gone. Harley probably shouldn't even be in it. Harley probably should have been on the shelf after he... He shouldn't even be wrestling, to be honest. Hillbilly Jim, we love you, Hillbilly, but you probably could have been skipped. Rougeau's, I would have kept him there. Stallions, you could have got rid of. JYD is... he still has a little star power left. Patera with his creamy legs. He's been wrestling okay. I would keep him. Ron Bass, I suppose. Sam Houston, goodbye.
Yeah,
fucking Sika. Really, Sika?
Right, Sika didn't need to be in there.
Sika needs a check? Come on. So you could have definitely melded... You're right, though, John. I mean, other than Warrior, if you envelop the two of them into the Battle Royal, that's really it. I mean, you can't break the six-man up because the whole storyline with Bobby stealing the animals. And because remember, I was watching the Superstars the day before. The whole thing, he stole Frankie.
They devoted a shitload of TV time to
Yeah.
Well, how about this?
You couldn't ditch that.
Can we fuck with this? Can we get rid of the Battle Royal and have just a different singles match instead? Dump Warrior Hercules maybe and the Battle Royal and just add one more singles match. Like, do we need the Battle Royal? Why do we have to have everyone on the card?
Yeah. And there's a rumor that they were going to put Jumping Bomb Angels and Glamour Girls on the card. That would have been... I mean, they of course, wrestled a million times.
For a better card, yes. But that was started... Everybody's got to get their payday.
Yeah. Now, I mean...
Yeah, everybody's got to get their payday.
Yeah.
But for better card purposes, ditch the Battle Royal, sure.
But yeah, but that's not going to happen. That's impossible.
You could have taken all the tag teams, and you could have done a
tournament.
Tag team tournament.
Tag tournament at the same time. No, have like a tag Battle Royal? I don't know.
Yeah, have a tournament to see who gets into the Battle Royal.
TNA booking 20 years before TNA.
Start the show at noon.
Did we need an IC title match? Could they have been in the tournament? I mean, Honky is IC champion, theoretically. You could argue he has a bitch, right, to say, hey, why, I'm a champion. Why can't I go for the world title? So could you have dropped two other guys, put Beefcake and Honky in the tournament maybe instead and then saved the match there?
I mean, at that point, you only had four pay-per-views a year, so, I mean, you're used to pretty much getting getting all the belts defended on the
well,
show.
Well, no, we had only had Mania and Survivor Series so far, and Survivor Series didn't have any title matches. The Rumble wasn't even a pay-per-view.
Show. I mean, it's...
I know, but that... Well, yeah, but you're saying we only had 4 a year. Like, SummerSlam hadn't even happened yet. So, I don't think anyone would have been too upset without a IC title match here, if you put it... I mean, when, you know, we just had a WrestleMania the year before with no tag title match. So, I think... My point is, I think you could have sold it as Honky... You know, Honky deserves a shot at the world title, so we're putting him in the tournament with Beefcake. I'm just trying to find ways to trim this thing down. I think that.
And then the argument is, well, what if he wins? Then what do you do now with the IC belt? I mean,
no, he loses by countout. I mean, well, yeah. I mean, what if he wins?
No,
obviously,
Honky would have to. Yeah, if he loses, it'd be by DQ. I think you couldn't have him lose in any other way, really, because the whole gimmick was that he's still fluky, keeping the belt month after month.
Yeah, and then, I mean, he probably doesn't have a win to go on to be earning a shot in the belt.
He has more of a stake to it than, like, fucking Dino Bravo or Butch Reed.
No, how about this? I got an idea.
Totally.
Idea. How about this? How about you put Honky in the tournament? Fuck Beef. Don't worry about Beefcake. Put him in the Battle Royal or something. Put Honky in the tournament. Have him in the semis or something against Savage, because I know we don't want to see another Honky Savage match, but bear with me. All the Honky Savage matches we've had, on a local scale we've seen Savage wins, but on a national scale we keep seeing Honky ducking him. So maybe this is finally the moment. Who cares if he doesn't win the belt? That doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Maybe Honky finally does get pinned by Savage.
No, I buy into that idea, Scott.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that'd be good, because that would end the story with Savage,
yeah,
Honky,
he can get pinned. Savage can pin Honky without the belt. At that point, nobody gave a fuck. That wasn't really the focus on this tournament. This wasn't like an MSG house show or something. You could have Honky eat a pin to Savage,
right?
And then feel vulnerable, and then maybe, and then you could kind of reamp the Beefcake thing again.
And you could have Honky win Savage. You could have Honky win a first round match too, right? So maybe you drop. I mean, if you take Butch Reed out, maybe you shift Gang over to Savage in the first round. And you have Honky go over Bigelow or something instead. So, you know, whatever. You're trimming things up a bit. Or Beefcake. Yeah.
Really piss off Bonnie Steamboat and have Steamboat job to him again.
Yeah, there you go. You can do that. Maybe you do that. Maybe you just do Honky Steamboat and, like, DiBiase Beefcake or something. You know, whatever. I mean, there's ways to do it. Or, you know, Savage in there, too. So, if you want to mix this up a little bit, I think there were ways to do it. So, all right, let's do this. One last exercise. Before we wrap up, what could this card have been built like? And we're kind of doing it now, but eliminate the tournament. And let's say for shits and giggles, the title gets held up and Tunney says, all right, well, give me your thoughts. Like, would you do a four-man tournament like Pete mentioned or like John mentioned? Would you just do Hogan DiBiase for the belt? We could build it around that. Instead, we could say Hogan... You know, Andre hands it over to DiBiase. He's technically the last champion, so Hogan gets a shot. Maybe it's not vacated. And then you build the rest of the card. Or you could do, I don't know, let's just say Hogan-Andre again. I guess you don't want to do that. So let's run with this hypothetical that Hogan-DiBiase is our main event with the title on the line. How would you fill out the rest of this card, Kelly?
Let's see. Well, Demolition Strike Force, I think, should stay because that was... the coronation of Demolition, and that needed to happen. Let's see what we have here. Bigelow and Gang also felt like a match that they'd been building for a while. But if in an ideal circumstance, you would have had like a, you know, a 10-minute plus sort of brawl match between the two of them if Bigelow wasn't hurt. Savage, maybe a cage with Honky Tonk Man. To finish that off, if you weren't,
yeah, I have Savage with Andre.
Yeah,
with Andre doing the favors for Savage to set up a Savage DiBiase, because I have DiBiase going over Hulk.
So DiBiase goes over Hulk.
Savage at SummerSlam.
Interesting. I mean, that's a
or even quicker. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean for sure, because a win. Savage win over Andre would have been huge. I was just thinking, trying to tie up, because they never really did finish that feud, Savage and Honky. It just sort of just ended without any resolution.
You could do. Here's the thing, JR. You were talking about you say putting Hogan DiBiase in the final. Are you assuming that Hogan's not leaving any wins?
Because no, I'm just saying that's the title match. You can do it either way, whatever you want to do.
Okay, well, here was my thing, because I was thinking you could kind of do, you could steal WrestleMania 10 before WrestleMania 10, have Tunney take the last three guys that had the belt, Hogan, DiBiase, and Andre, and have Hogan wrestle DiBiase early in the night, have him get boned, and then have Savage wrestle Andre, and then DiBiase's thinking, you know, an equally suitable opponent kind of thing, and DiBiase's trying to set it up so, you know, if my boy Andre wins, and I don't have to wrestle, you know, a real match. And then in the end, Tunney's like, well, Andre, you know, is injured, so guess what? You're going to have to wrestle Savage now, and then you have Savage. You get Savage DiBiase to end it anyway.
I mean, if you're going to do that, I would just do D'Amato's four-man tournament idea. I mean, if you're going to get that convoluted and you're having all four guys in there anyway, I would just say go with the four men. You could do Savage DiBiase. You could do Savage Andre Hogan DiBiase as your first round, and then
yeah,
Savage DiBiase in your
that's
finals.
True.
And one thing we're missing here, which I think what the ultimate goal was, to get the belt off Hulk because he's going to go do a movie and he was going to be out till SummerSlam pretty much, and they don't want to hurt his drawing power.
So maybe the four-man tournament's the way to go then if you're going to alt-universe book this, right? So maybe it's Savage versus Andre, Hogan versus DiBiase, and then Savage DiBiase in the final. So DiBiase screws Hogan again. Maybe he wins by count-out or whatever, and then Savage beats... I mean, that's tough. You're probably not going to have Savage pin Andre clean, so you're looking at two count-out or fuck finishes with that four, I guess, but...
The smartest thing they did in the tournament was the double count-out with...
Right.
Or a double DQ with Hulk and Andre because
you need that last match to end on
Andre
a pin.
In a way.
That last match has got to end on the pin, the one for the belt.
In a tournament style.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have Hogan just beat DiBiase because that kind of. I mean, you could have DiBiase. You could have some kind of schmoz with DiBiase winning that match. You could have Andre beat Andre, and then have Andre just beat the tar out of him.
So I think what we're stumbling into is that they probably booked this exactly how they should. right? It's nothing's intuitively jumping out at us. I mean, if Hogan has to lose the title,
crown a new champion who can draw money, and that was Randy Savage, and protect their other golden goose, which was Hulk.
Yeah,
and still keep DiBiase strong enough for his first round of challenges.
I mean, that's really the only way to do it. Unless Hogan's staying, where then you could just do Hogan DiBiase with Hogan going over. But
you never booked a tournament. Yeah, right. That was the case. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, they still weren't ready for a heel to win the main event of WrestleMania. They still wanted to make WrestleMania a happy ending kind of thing. So.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if as Pete said, if your goal is to not have Hogan job legit, then you're fucked either way.
And you can't really have Andre job either. I don't think they're ready to start having him lay down for anyone else.
Two years in a row, sure.
Nah,
because you could say they could have done Hogan DiBiase underneath and then Andre Savage for the belt or something. But, I mean, they're not going to have – Andre's just not going to lose clean to Savage. So the only way to do this was having
Andre losing clean because – I mean, think about it. In 5 years, he'd be dead. I mean,
yeah, but in this time frame, no one. I mean, he's only lost really clean once to Hogan.
Right.
Yeah.
So having him lose to Savage here, which is, I don't know. It didn't seem like something they were ready to do. Having him lose like that to Savage.
You're right. That's why they kept him in their own little tournament bracket.
Mm. Yeah. No, the matches may have been lackluster, but the actual booking was like. Almost 100% correct. They just, the matches themselves were just rushed and heatless. But
yeah, I mean,
the way they booked it was.
Yeah. Good. On paper, DiBiase and Duggan, that's off an old feud from UWF Mid-South. It's a famous feud. Mm-hmm. They always had great matches. I mean, yeah, this is a different Duggan. When Men Gang and then Bam Bam Bigelow on paper sounds fantastic, except Bigelow has a blown out knee.
Mm-hmm.
Reed and Savage, you were hoping Savage could pull a miracle. It didn't happen. Valentine Steamboat was legit the best match in the first round.
Yeah.
Rock and Bravo had no chance in hell of having a good match. and Jake and Rude, in theory, they'd been feuding and having good matches.
Yeah.
And booking them for a 15-minute draw was the worst thing. That took the bite out of their
yeah.
match.
We wrestled, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Of all the matches to book 15 minutes.
Right. They should have just went to a brawl double DQ, too, or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They were saving it for their feud. They were saving it for the house show feud.
Yeah, the feud hadn't actually begun.
Right. But that's why double DQ would have been better, right? Because they have such a heated brawl to the back or a double count out.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It kicks off the feud. I mean, could they have reshaken up the tournament brackets just a little bit to ensure some better quality in ring? I think so. I mean, the show's pretty bloated. There's not a lot of like gaga though to it. Like, I mean, they move from match to match pretty quickly. There's not a lot you can say. Like the next year, obviously with five, we have a lot of crap that could have been cut. But here, it's kind of all right. Well, we do move match to match. I mean, if you cut Warrior Herc, you're only really saving 5 to 7 minutes. At the most. So maybe you do that. Maybe you cut down Jake and Rude. Maybe you cut that down to 7. So it's 15 minutes saved. What else? I mean, nothing else is even that long. That's it. The only other match over 10 minutes was the tag team title match. So, I mean, there's not a ton of time to shave. It's just a lot of matches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The final doesn't even go 10 minutes.
And the Battle Royal is only 9 change, right. So even if you get rid of that, you're not cutting that much.
No, I probably would cut Jake and Rude in half.
Yeah.
I would dump Warrior Herc, so there's 14 minutes down. So, I mean, now we're talking, okay, maybe we're just a little over 3 hours, right, instead of 3.5. So we're getting there. Maybe Demolition Strike Force, you could probably cut a few minutes off if you need to.
Long-ass walk down the stairs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that too, right? Yeah. So
it would have been good night to have the cart.
And you know what? I mean, yeah. I guess the fans probably wanted it, but Hogan poses for like 7 minutes after the double DQ. probably didn't need that either. But all right. So anyone else have anything they wanted to cover when it comes to the itself?
Again, I think it's just great that the show did have this intrigue, because if you're a newer fan. Like most of us were newer in the sense that, you know, maybe from 84 on at that time, the concept of the world title being this unstable is kind of neat, and having a tournament. If you're an older fan where the world, as I said in the first segment, where the world title was just rock solid for years and now suddenly it's very unstable, you're thinking, wow, this is kind of nuts. I mean, this is the new way of watching wrestling instead of it was back in the 70s when our world champion was solid. It was the tags that had all the issues. So, as bloated as the show looked in terms of number of guys, there was definitely a lot of great intrigue and a lot of good build going in. So I think you were kind of sunk on how to cut it down. I mean, the roster was just so big.
Because, I mean, it did not draw nearly as much as WrestleMania 3, so it's coming off. It's going to look pale in comparison to that. Crockett had Clash of Champions 1, which smoked this show as a total show, mm-hmm. and took part of their audience.
Yeah, but the angle setting up Mania 4 was one of the best they ever did.
Yeah.
I think Mania 4 did pretty well on pay per view, but I mean Hogan Andre at 3, that was a once in a lifetime.
Oh, right.
Encounter. Yeah, so you can't really. And the tournament.
It was significant. And to enough where they went to the cable companies went to Crockett and told them don't ever run another show against us. The only reason they did it the next year was because they originally that was booked for a pay per view, but it got all in, got all they ended up making it a clash because Vince went behind their back and did a power play.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes at the time. It's really interesting.
Well, we did some work tonight, guys, and I think we settled on the fact that even though it's considered by many to be one of the lower-tier WrestleManias and it's a long show and not a great work rate, so when you look at where they were and what they're trying to do, really to box into a corner. With not wanting Andre and Hogan to really lose, with not having Hogan be champion, they're kind of stuck with options. So they did what they could, and you know, you could probably trim a thing here or there, but overall, I think they're pretty much ended up where they needed to be. So It was good, though. I'm glad that we kind of worked our way naturally into it, but just going through all these options, that didn't seem feasible. So hopefully everyone enjoyed the conversation. I thought this was really fun, as always, taking the dive back into the 70s stuff and then bringing it right up until where we are today. So, Scott, we're off next week as you have your Sword and Shield Classic Tournament for the Knights of Columbus charity event. So we'll be off next Monday. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. D'Amato will be here. We'll look at WrestleMania 4 itself. And then rumors are swirling, Kelly Nelson, that he'll be back for an MSG show this month sometime. So,
yes, I will.
Call my hotline for more. all right, so this past week we had a new Wrestling War Zone Monday Night Wars episode dropped. We're off this week. Chad's away, so we'll be back next week having a blast with that. New Jeff Learns Wrestling, ironically enough, coincidentally enough, looking at WrestleMania 4. Jeff also talked to us some personal stuff he has going on, which was pretty raw conversation on his end. So that went about 30 minutes to open the show. So we came back with a bang there. That was a lot of fun to do as well. Scott, anything you got going on this week you want to talk about?
We will have a new main event coming up this week. It is a mailbag episode. So myself, Brother Nate, and Steve will go over Place B Nation's mailbag questions. We got a lot of great stuff. And we will do our next TNA pay-per-view recap from 2002. So that'll be... I'll be doing that Wednesday, so that'll drop Wednesday evening. So look out for that.
Okay, rumors are also swirling that Aaron George and myself may be perusing the podcast airwaves soon, the next couple of days.
Excellent.
So we'll see. Kelly, what do you got going on?
Well, Pete and I, as always, with Johnny Sorrow, have WorldCast every week. Well, almost every week. Last week, we actually looked at the hidden gems, that the big drop that they did. With the Jack Briscoe story and the Piper Valentine awesome brawl. And we had a great time going over that stuff. And coming up on WorldCast, well, we're into the Freebirds finally in the territory. So business is picking up. And yeah, check it out.
Pete, anything else you got going on besides that?
I do This Week in Wrestling, where Tim and I. Look at a lot of things going on in the indies. We do cover NXT and, mostly indies or New Japan. We look at some progress, some rev pro, but yeah, we mostly stick to the indies, though.
All right. D'Amato, anything?
No, sir. See you for WrestleMania 4.
All right. Excellent. So that'll do it. Hope everyone had a good time. I enjoyed this as well. Always good to get here with the boys, talk some old school wrestling. So be sure to follow us on social media, facebook.com/placetobenation, place2bnation on Twitter, Instagram, I think, Tumblr somewhere. Of course, shop with us, placetobenation.com/Amazon, and all the stuff. Yes. We'll be touting often, early and often. So, all right. That's it. We're out. Talk to you in a couple weeks. Goodbye.
Sergeant Goulet.
Sergeant Silvano.
Injecting everyone with Legionnaire's disease. That's why he wears the gloves, so he can hold the needle.
The deadly throws up these songs.